when you're thinking about a podcast, it's like, oh, podcasts usually don't cost a lot of money to start up. But if you're wanting to do big projects like this, it requires a lot of time and money for people to be successful in this type of project.
There's over 1.9 million podcasts. Most of them never see the results they expected. They want to monetize, but their show ends up costing them money, and they never achieve the listenership they desire. This show will help you launch, grow, monetize, and inspire with your podcast. Get ready to take notes, because here's your host, Adam Adams.
And we're back with The Pop, the podcast on podcasting. This is the place where podcasters come to be able to grow their influence, to be able to have more listeners, downloads, to be able to make more money with their show, and ultimately to make sure that they're not wasting their time having a podcast that isn't downloaded by anybody. And one cool thing that we have today is Dylan Adams. We're not related, I don't think, but we are both from Utah originally, right, Dylan?
Yep.
And I think you're from the same place that I started my college career. I was a band major. I was one of those band geeks, and I played the tuba for, what was his name? Dr. Root. Dr. Root at, what's that place called? WSU, Weber.
Weber State University. Yes.
Funny. I love having something in common with you. A couple things in common. We're both from, do you like music?
Oh, I love music. I kind of live and breathe it. I work in theater, and musical theater has paid my bills for quite a long time. So I love
music.
That's
awesome. That's awesome. And you've gotten pretty good at crowdfunding. So Dylan's partner is a podcaster. But you, Dylan, you don't have a podcast, right?
I don't have a podcast. I've been thinking about starting one, but I just haven't done it yet.
Got it. Well, so let's dive in, because what we're going to talk about is that crowdfunding that you've learned so well. And I've got 8 questions queued up that I think are going to help the listener if they want to do something like this. I'm going to ask you the first question, and then I'm going to let you do your bio. Is that fair?
Sounds good.
All right. So give me a short bio after you tell me what it is that you do.
So I am a crowdfunding consultant. And what that means is I consult projects that are trying to raise funds on crowdfunding sources such as Kickstarter, Indiegogo, Seed and Spark, Pinkstart, and the many others that are out there. And I help them plan their game plan from beginning to end so they're successful in raising the money so they can achieve their dreams and goals that they're trying to do.
Awesome. So tell me, how did you get into it?
I got into crowdfunding by a friend of mine from school here in New York City. They were trying to put on a production off Broadway in the city, and they were like, hey, we are crowdfunding and we're needing producers. And if you want to come on, we'll give you this course that we're learning from this guy named the Kickstarter guy. And he has a 95% success rate. And I learned his course and it taught me a lot. And I've been helping other people ever since with their projects.
All right. I want to hear a few examples. And you said you've worked on a few projects. So I'm really going to ask 2 things about the examples. First, I want to know like a big success that you had, like something that you were able to help somebody raise money through crowdfunding. And outside of that, the examples that I'm looking for are really like, what types of things can a podcaster use crowdfunding for?
Mm-hmm. So one of my biggest successes actually just happened this last week. So I have been working with a podcast called The Flame Podcast. They are creating a musical theater podcast. It's the first of really of its kind. They're creating a musical for podcasters since theater isn't really happening right now. And when I jumped on their team, they were only had raised $4,000 out of the $26,000. And we raised in like 3.5 weeks time since they hired me onto their project, almost $20,000 in that short time. And then we got an extension for 5 days because the crowding campaign site allowed us to have that extra 5 days. And we raised another $2,000 just in that short week and a half. So I was really pleased at how fast we were able to raise funds in such a short time and turn around a campaign that wasn't functioning as well into a very successful campaign.
What did they use the $26,000 for again? They were launching some type of
a musical podcast.
It's a virtual
experience.
Musical podcast.
Yep.
Okay. And why did they need the money? Is it for advertising? Is it to pay actors?
So they got to pay their actors. They got to pay the musicians. They got to pay the writer. They got to pay the book writer. They got to pay for the sound engineer, the editors. They have a social media manager, productions assistant. They got to pay me. So a lot of things that go into it. And the thing is I'm like, when you're thinking about a podcast, it's like, oh, podcasts usually don't cost a lot of money to start up. But if you're wanting to do big projects like this, it requires a lot of time and money for people to be successful in this type of project.
Awesome. Out of curiosity, I'm thinking about how they get their money back. Like they, all of a sudden it's $26,000 out to you and to like composers and all that kind of stuff. Podcasts are most of the time free.
Mm-hmm.
So how do they get their money back?
So with crowdfunding, it is a donation and you usually will get a perk with it. So with The Flame, if you donated $50, you got the entire cast album downloaded for you for free. That was the exchange for that $50. Some people will do there's various levels and perks. Like if you donated, let's say there was a level for $2,000, you got a producer credit and it was on IMDb Pro and they would meet with you and you would get to meet with the cast and talk with them at the launch party that will happen in June of 2021.
Okay. I don't know if we're on the same page or not. I think you mentioned a way that you basically mentioned that the person who donated the money, they weren't always expecting to get their money back in that case. But I guess I mean like launching a podcast like this, is there advertisers on the podcast to kind of offset the reason why they put all that money out or?
So they will have advertisers, but that won't be part of my job of finding those advertisers. They will be doing that on their own. So that would be on them to find those advertisers. And if someone donated, let's say like a corporate sponsorship, but they wanted to corporate sponsorship outside of the campaign, and that's what they wanted was advertisements within the podcast, they could go about it that way.
Okay. The next question that I wanted to make sure, it's all about just kind of these podcasters that are listening, that they're wanting to go to the next level, they're wanting to grow, and they're hearing this, and it probably is fancy. Oh, that's cool, crowdfunding, make money, be able to do stuff. But specifically, what kind of stuff can we do with crowdfunding? Like, what can we raise money for?
Let's say you have a brand new product and it's like the brand new toy on the market and kids are going to love it, but you don't have the funds to like be able to go to the manufacturer and say, hey, let's manufacture this. So it's like, oh, you have a prototype, but you don't have the money to manufacture this and sell it to the consumers that are going to want it. So it's like, okay, let's raise some funds to be able to launch this and this product. You could do it that way. You could also, it's like, let's say you have been working for years and years and you hate your job, but you love podcasting and you want to launch your business. You could crowdfund to launch your business as a podcaster for whatever topic you're wanting to talk about. And another option could be, let's say you're working in the entertainment industry and you want to make a movie or put on a play, then you could crowdfund your entire project on a platform like this.
Mm-hmm. What's another example of somebody that you've worked with and helped them raise capital for through crowdfunding?
So I had a friend, she was putting on a web series and she did it through Kickstarter and they were raising $45,000. And with that, as a gift to them, I actually gave my services and time to them to be able to build a plan for them to be able to be successful in raising the $45,000. And part of that planning was emailing, how to effectively email angel donors that have more money than with just the average person just in their pocket of like, and then also what I would do would be seeing how they were effectively using their contacts and being and giving them suggestions of how to reach within their audience, and then also broadening their audience that they're not traditionally in, to be able to see what they were doing, to see if they could get donations or likes or shares to their podcast, not so, podcast and project.
So that friend of yours who is looking to do 45,000, is that project still going or?
So at the moment, because of the pandemic, they couldn't film the project.
Oh yeah.
So they are currently just waiting for the clearance to just film the project, because one of their, the big part of the project was taking place on a college campus, and college campuses are kind of full of coronavirus, depending on where you're at and where they were particularly going to film. In New York, they can't film because of the laws right now regarding coronavirus. It's just okay. Makes it a little tricky right now to film safely.
Got it. Got it. Well, what's the most you've ever crowdfunded on one project?
60,000.
Nice. Nice. All right. So we're going to dive into a few more questions then. I guess what's probably on the listener's mind, you've mentioned that someone paid you, and you've mentioned that you've gifted it to a friend once. What does it cost to kind of work with someone like you?
So if you were going to start from beginning to end, and let's say it's like you've had the idea and you're like, I just don't know how to go about this, and you wanted to start, have someone to consult you from beginning to end so you were successful, I usually start about $3,000. Another person that I highly respect in their crowdfunding resources is the Kickstarter guy, and he charges $5,000. And so from beginning to end. And I also do one-on-one coaching. So it's like, oh, I need consulting for a couple hours. I charge $50 an hour for that.
Cool. So how long does it take? Like if we were going to work with someone like you, and we wanted to raise, let's say $15,000.
Yeah, $15,000 is within a very reasonable range. You could do that. The prep time I would say would be 3 to 4 months before launch. And depending on what platform you were going on, if it was Kickstarter, you could easily, I would say that would be about 4 months of prep work and then the month of the crowdfunding. So a total of 5 months of what of your life would be prepping and then actually doing the crowdfunding to be successful.
Okay. Got it. And is that like full-time hours?
It just depends on what your schedule is. It really, if you want to make it full-time, it can shorten the process. But let's say that you work a full-time job like most of us do outside of podcasting, that's why it takes 4 or 5 months. It's like, okay, I have this full-time job, but I got to dedicate like 3 or 4 hours a day just prepping this an additional to my full-time job. You know, the first crowdfunding I ever did, I was in school full-time and doing side work as well on addition to crowdfunding. So I would have to give about 3 hours a day in the prep work before the launch day to fully prep myself.
Got it.
So that's about 21 hours a week. So technically it's just about a part-time job right there. It's like a part-time job on top of a full-time job.
Got it. But that's something that people can hire you to do, right?
Yeah, I can. One of the things that I do and I have done in the past for people is I consult them from beginning and I can put a full team together. I've done it before. I've put a 15 person team together for crowdfunding before to raise funds for a project. So
okay.
Numbers often make it easier to raise funds with crowdfunding to get to your goal.
Got it. I'm excited about these next few questions because I think we're really just diving into this topic. If people are interested in maybe utilizing services like this, then I think we've got the right questions for them. The next one is just like, what all does it entail? Like if somebody's going to work with somebody like you to get to this next level, what is all what do they have to be thinking about and what needs to be done?
So one of the first things needs to be done is what is the budget that you need, like, for the project? That's one of the first things you got to ask, is saying, hey, what do I actually need money financially to be successful at this project? The second thing is your why. Why am I doing this? What is the reason you are doing this project? Why should someone invest into my project? And why should they be part of this community? I'm like, what? You want people joining your community and sharing what is so awesome about whatever you are trying to get out there. And, you know, and then after that, it's preparing, and preparation leads to opportunity. And once that opportunity shows itself, that's where it leads to success, if you're prepared. And so once you have those things figured out, you got to start planning what you are going to do regarding how to get it to the people. How are you going to do that? You're going to do that by emailing people, phone calling, texting people, meeting person one-on-one when it's safe to do so, once COVID's over, you know. Also, it's just like your social media on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and TikTok, like all those things, you got to plan all those things out. And so you have to make a game plan. It's how do I do each of those things effectively without coming off as selly, but as a genuine person being like, this is what I am passionate about. And this is why I want you to be part of my community that I'm building.
Cool. So you mentioned that you have to kind of figure out the budget. Would you say that most people just nail it on the budget ahead of time? Or would you say that others are kind of like me and fix and flippers, where they think that it's not going to take quite as much money, and then they raise it, and then they realize, holy cow, money goes fast, and I really should have tried for more?
Yeah, that happens often, actually. It's like people are like, oh, I need this, but then they realize, oh, I need a whole lot more. So to me, that's part of the planning. It's like, hey, what do I realistically need? And sometimes it's like, sometimes you want to get a little bit more, saying, hey, what if something happens? This is an emergency fund if something happens. You want that little extra to get you over the fence. But also you have to remember too, it's like, oh, I need this exactly. But when you're working on a platform like Kickstarter and Indiegogo and like Seed and Spark for like films and such, you have to also pay them to use that platform. So you're giving them about Kickstarter is 5%, Indiegogo is 3%, Seed and Spark for films, I believe, is 2 or 1%. The one that I've been working on is 3%. So you also have to put that in mind, being like, well, I gotta pay the platform as well. So off your full total that you raise, you're giving that percentage to the platform.
And Kickstarter and some of these others, you've mentioned a couple of times that, like, you want to have your own friends, you want to kind of get this out in front of the people that already know you. But is Kickstarter just a place where they can put the money that already know you, or does Kickstarter kind of advertise it and put it out in front of others that also don't know you?
Well, Kickstarter to kind of show your project, you have to be like getting a ton of donations coming in. So it's kind of like an algorithm. You're working against an algorithm. So the more people that donate, Kickstarter is going to notice, hey, this is starting to work. So they're going to show it on their feature page saying, hey, look at this project. So when you type in Kickstarter.com, your project's right at the front of the page. So it's like when you're on social media, the more likes and the comments that you get and the more organic shares, the more likely you're going to see the post, you know. And if you're sponsoring it and it's getting that, it's really going to spread like wildfire. So it's kind of the same concept when you're using Kickstarter.
Got it. So you kind of figured out a way to market it pretty heavily in the beginning enough so that you hit the algorithm so that they start promoting you.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's like the same thing that we do when we help people launch a new podcast. We want to make sure that because it's generally like only people's friends and their family that starts, maybe it's only 20 people or whatever that are listening, But if you do a whole bunch of marketing and you're able to get lots of ratings, lots of reviews, lots of downloads, lots of listeners, lots of subscribers, which is what my team does, then all of a sudden Apple puts you in front of like people that don't know you. So I definitely understand the concept now. The next question that I have is, what are some tricks to raising more money?
So this is the ever question, like growing question of like, what's going to do it? You know, I generally think when you are being genuine about what you're doing and your project, you have strong content from your social media and like all around that you're using from your crowdsourcing site. So it's a clear video of what you're doing, good content, genuine outreach to people. That generally does the trick. You know, those are three really good things. I think strong content, having a clear message of why you're doing the project, and being genuine when you're speaking with people generally does the trick in getting more money. You know, it may require you to reach out to thousands of people, which with crowdfunding, you're going to have to reach out to thousands of people to get to your goal, depending on what the number is. If it's like 15,000 or less, you may be reaching out to a few thousand people. But if you're raising, let's say, 60 to 100,000 people, you're going to have to reach to the masses to get that funding when you're working in this way.
Got it. Cool. So I actually want to repeat what you said. You know, you mentioned that you have a video and you mentioned that you have to be really authentic. I don't think those are the exact words that you use, but just basically being who you are genuinely seems to be really resonate with me. I feel like, you know, trying to be smarter than you are or trying to be more whatever just doesn't usually seem to go over well with other people. And I think that's a lesson for like all podcasters in general, regardless if you're raising money. Like if you if you're hosting a podcast, just be you, just be who you are, be yourself, because it's going to resonate with some people. And you might not resonate with everybody, and you shouldn't. But when you're hosting a podcast or trying to raise money, you got to be honest, genuine, authentic to who you are as a core. And I think that's a big tip for either having a podcast or raising money. But I also liked how you mentioned having strong content and being able to basically add value to other people that are going to invest with you. And that's if you're raising private equity, if you're raising debt, or if you're doing what you're doing and doing more like crowdfunding, being able to educate and help other people know what's going on is really a benefit. That's actually why I host this show. I want to add lots of value to podcasters because my business serves podcasters. And so it just makes total sense. And the last thing is the individual outreach, I think, is genius. I think this is super, super genius, because there's, if all you're doing is just the massive, you mentioned this kind of before, where you might have a few thousand people that you have to reach out to if you want to raise like 15,000. That's really only $3 a person average, right?
Yep.
But you mentioned that it gets really effective when you can reach out to one person individually. And I've always liked that approach as well. A phone call, a text message, a private message versus just like a Facebook post versus just like an email blast. But actually reaching out to somebody individually. So you found that kind of helps to be able to raise more capital?
For me, that works best for me when I am crowdfunding on projects. For some people, it's emails. Some people, it is Facebook, depending on what their audience is. Every person's audience is different. So for me, when I make a phone call to people or speak with someone one-on-one, I am by far more successful when raising funds that way, because then people are able to see or hear the passion that I have about a project.
Yeah, I love that. That's a really good tip. And next question I have for you, just want to find out what things are really important. Like what's most important as you're preparing to do this? I think we've discussed it before today that prep time can take like 2-3 months, and then the raise time is that 1 month. So what are the most important things that you need to do to prep?
So the most important thing to prep, this is probably one of the more tedious parts of this process, is creating a pad list. And a pad list is P stands for personal, the A stands for acquaintance, and D stands for do not contact. So the P on your list is the people that you personally know in your life that are like your best friends, your family members, people that you know personally. So that's a really easy. Those are people that you want to contact too. It's like, oh, they're my family. These are like friends that are in my life. Great. Your acquaintances, they're kind of like your Facebook friends that you, let's say you have like 5,000 Facebook friends and you maybe have not met a lot of them in person. Those are acquaintances. And if you have it on Twitter or whatever, it's like, you know, those things, those people are going to be your acquaintances. Now, your do not contact list is people you don't want to contact because maybe one, you know, that person is going to be invested into your project and you don't want to like waste energy and time on that person because you don't want to upset them for wasting their time to having to click on something on Facebook or open an email. But also think about it this way too. Let's say they have something to benefit you with over money. Because the thing is money isn't everything. Some people have services that could really benefit your business. So it's like, oh, I don't want to ask them for money. I want to ask them to see if they will willingly give time to me to help me with my project through this service at some point or later on down the road when I have the funds to be able to do this project, they're going to be really good to be in my inner circle. So I don't want to ask this person for money right now. I need that favor later, you know, mm-hmm. of what their service is.
Got it. And I like that. So you make a pad list. I'd never heard of that before. Personal, acquaintance, and do not contact. And I know that you mentioned that you could reach out to them either to invest their money or to help with their services either now or later.
Mm-hmm.
But I also was just kind of wondering if you were going to go here or not. There's some people that just have a big list. Like there are some people that have a bunch of friends or they have a Twitter following or an Instagram following or whatever it is. Would you also maybe reach out to people that have kind of that pull in the marketplace?
Oh, absolutely. You know, if they fit your message and what you're trying to share to the world, absolutely. You reach out to those people. So let's say this person, you follow them, they follow you, and you guys are fans of each other, and they have a major following of like, let's say 10 million Twitter followers. And you're like, oh, we're friends. We both share the same mission. So versus asking them to donate to your campaign, ask them to share your project on their platform. So everyone that is in that person's audience is seeing the project. So then, oh, somebody clicks and likes it. It's starting to spread in all those other communities that you may not have access to. That's a really good trade-off.
Cool.
Versus a donation. So people are seeing it and then more people will come look at the page and donate.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate that. I also wanted to ask you just because we're talking about, you know, the pad, which is personal, acquaintance and do not contact. I feel like there's a lot of people and I'm one of them that it sometimes feels a little awkward to kind of go to my personal contacts and ask them for money and ask for favors. Sometimes it just feels awkward. What are some tips to effectively use your personal contacts?
I completely understand where you're coming from because I personally have felt that way at times too. You know, I think the most effective way to go about this is being genuine, going back to being genuine. It's like if you're passionate about your project and you're wanting to share it to the world, you should be really proud to share what you're doing to your family. And, you know, here's the thing, not every family member is going to give you money. Like the simple thing you can actually do is, can you just share this to some of your friends? Or mm-hmm. if you're willing to put it on your Facebook or share it with a friend on the phone you're talking to, or email this to someone. It's like allowing them to have the option to donate or help you in other ways, because ultimately at the end of the day, you want it to get as to many people as possible. So if you have family members that you're not comfortable asking just for a share or just talking about the project is an easy way to go about it. You don't even have to start immediately saying, "Hey, give me your money." That never goes well with anybody. It's like, "I need money." It's like, talk about what you're working on, saying, "Oh," ask them how they're doing and ask them their interest of what they're doing, and then kind of lead into it is a really good way I have discovered, is talking about them and being like, and then when they ask, "Oh, what are you doing?" then share, "Oh, I have this project, I'm working on this and we're raising funds and right now, and this is where you can go look at it. If you want to share it or help us out in any way, I appreciate it." And it can be as simple as that. You don't overcomplicate it. At the end of the day, just be genuine. And when you're talking with someone and calling someone, be personal with them and ask about them and make sure that they are feeling welcome to join your community if you're wanting them in your community for whatever you are trying to get to.
Good stuff. Dylan, any other advice if somebody wants to do crowdfunding from their podcast?
Other advice I think that you should consider before you launch your podcast is make sure that it's the right thing for you to do, because not every podcast, not every project is right for crowdfunding. Make sure it's right for you. Make sure you prep well, have a team together. Because one of the things, so when you're raising funds, I didn't say this earlier, but when you are raising funds, one person through all your contacts when you're crowdfunding is about $4,000 a person. That is about the average a person can raise on a crowdfunding. That's generally what I have learned and seen over the last few years I have been doing this. Is about
What does that mean, so, $4,000 per person?
So if you are on a crowdfunding team and let's say we are trying to raise $30,000. So $4,000 a person is about what each person can sell.
Eight or nine people on your team.
Okay. So it's like, so making sure you prep yourself in finding those people that are going to join your team, you know, that can take real time. You know, I did a $45,000 project once and I had to put a team of 15 people together, and that still doesn't even get to 40,000. 45,000 with fifth, okay. You know, it just takes time, and making sure that you are clear about how you're going to email, how you're going to outreach with your social media, and how you're going to do it personally through your phone, text messages, and in person, and making a real game plan for that and prepping yourself months out and start building the launch day ready to go.
Yeah.
Those are the big things that is prep time. Make sure that you are effectively planning how to use your email contacts, your personal contacts from in-person, phone, text messages, and your social media from Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok. Plan those out and make sure you have a clear plan of how you're going to do it from your prep to when you launch and all the days during your campaign. If you do those things, you will be successful.
And when you work with somebody, Dylan, that's what you do, right? You do all that planning. So like because for me, when you're saying that, I'm getting overwhelmed. You're like, you got to plan this, you got to plan that, you got to plan this other thing. And I'm thinking to myself, holy shnikes, I don't want to plan all that stuff. So I could just hire someone like you.
You can, and I can do that, but also generally, the projects that I generally do on is I tell people how to do it, and then they have someone on their team that goes and does that.
Okay.
And so they split it up, and within a team, you split up the work. So it's not as overwhelming, because it is overwhelming, all the things that you got to do. And that's why I say you got to really prep for something like this, so it's not stressful. Cool. So when you're launching and you're doing the campaign, it's a lot easier to manage from day to day.
Perfect. And if a listener does want to find you or get a hold of you, what's the best way?
You can go to my website at adamsdpa.com, or you can go on my Instagram at Adams DPA, and you can message me there and we can be in contact that way. And
so it's just ADAMSDPA.com is, and that's the website too.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I totally cut you off. I didn't mean to though. I want to make sure I had this right.
Oh, totally fine. Yeah. AdamsDPA.com. That's where you can see my website and you can go to the contact page and just contact me there and we can start a conversation there. Or you can go to my Instagram at AdamsDPA and you can direct message me there and we can start a conversation.
Cool, man. I'll definitely put the link in the show notes. So for the listener, you can literally just scroll down right now. The link is right there, Adams DPA. You can click it. You don't even have to memorize it, but go ahead and click it if you want to chat with him. Hey, Dylan, thanks for jumping on the show. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
I'll let you go for now, but until next time, think outside the box.
This episode is brought to you by growyourshow.com. Grow Your Show lets you be the star of your show while we handle all the hard stuff. We offer reliable and affordable post-production services that allow you to grow your show organically without all the work. So go ahead and check out the website right now and feel free to schedule a call with me and let's take your show to the next level. Again, growyourshow.com. You just press record. We handle the rest.